Hi, Hope, Girl, and Faith. Welcome to another Monday Mom Mentor. I'm excited to have here today with me Meredith Kendall, and we are going to talk about ways to equip and inspire you to nurture the hope of Christ in the home. So welcome, Meredith. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Well, thank you for having me, first of all.
No problem.
A little bit about me. Let's see. I'm a grandmother. I have three beautiful girls who married, been married for a while actually, and six, seven grandkids.
Wow.
I don't even know anymore.
Love it.
I'm a pastor's wife now. God added that to my new address to my name, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Interesting.
So yeah, we are in Southwest Florida. Planting a church. We're about 22 weeks old.
Wow.
So yeah, we are on a new journey, a journey I didn't see ourselves being on, and we have jumped in with both feet down here in Southwest Florida.
Wow. So I am just super curious about that. How did you end up planting a church? It doesn't sound like that was something that you've been doing for 30 years already.
Let's see. For the last 20 years, I've actually been mentoring women,
okay,
helping them to overcome their past, helping them to get to the root cause of why they do what they do,
wow,
and helping them to become the best person that God created them to be.
Cool.
So I've been doing that for 20 years. Last 4 or 5 years, we started going around the country, teaching and training churches on how to effectively minister in their backyard through the same principles that we were using. It wasn't about the giveaways. It was more about the relationships. Mm. It was about getting to know the women. Why do they need your help? Why are they coming for a bill to be paid? Why is their electricity getting ready to be paid, cut off or something like that? And how do we create in them the value, the purpose, the dignity that God put in all of us? But unfortunately, churches get so tied up in just doing church that it's just easier to pay a bill than it is to get to the root issue. So we've been going around the country, and then a couple of years ago, God was like, yeah, we're about to do something different with you. So I need you just to kind of sit back and relax for a minute. Sold our house because we knew God was up to something. Ended up in an apartment after we were homeless for about 30 days because the market was so busy. We couldn't get into an apartment. So we lived with our kids, went and visited family. And for a year, we're in an apartment just asking God, okay, we're here. We are available. We're empty nesters. What do you want from us? Mm-hmm. And about that time, I had asthma. And so I was on my way to the doctor and told him that I just didn't feel good again. We're getting ready to travel. And he gave me a prescription that said, must have Florida beach time, perhaps permanently. He said, the Florida beach air would clear up my lungs. I'm like, okay. So I took it home to my husband jokingly. We came down to Florida because we had a couple of different things we had to do. And we go back home, and 9 days later, we're back in Tennessee, and I'm on my way to the walk-in clinic because I cannot breathe.
Wow.
And I turn this, nothing straight in Tennessee, by the way, because you got mountains and roads.
Okay.
They just aren't straight. So I'm turning this sharp corner. There's nothing in front of me. And I have to slam on my brakes because there's an 18-wheeler.
Oh.
And I'm like, what in the world? Where did this thing come from? Well, because we've been traveling so much, we love to read the back of trucks, mm-hmm, And so I'm reading the back of this truck and it says, ready to move? We're like, okay. And then the thing is said, ready to move SWFL.com, which is Southwest Florida. And in the band, it says Fort Myers, Cape Coral, and Naples, which is Lee County. I'm like, snaps a picture. And I sent it to my husband. I said, is this handwriting enough? Because we had been praying. Okay, God, if you want us to leave our family, if we're supposed to go plant this church, this means like 823 miles away from grandkids, away family, elderly parents. We're going to start over in a state we don't even have any, nothing. It's like we are going to parachute in and start over.
Wow.
And And then a couple other things happened. So we actually came down here and we're 20 weeks old now.
Wow. So that takes a huge amount of trust in God to uproot yourself and move and do something so brand new like that. Wow. Was it hard for your husband to make that decision?
Oh, no. He has felt that he's, well, let me put it this way. We have felt he was supposed to be a pastor for a very long time.
So he wasn't a pastor before that?
No. Well, we were called the pastors to the streets.
Okay.
Because of the people we were working with. We were working in jails and halfway houses and the women that were living in poverty and that kind of stuff. So we kind of were called the pastors to the streets. But we always thought God would give us a church in that hometown. We've been there for 34 years. But no, he brought us all the way down here where we now live in what they call the the Winter Waterland or something, or Wonder Waterland. That's what it is. The Wonder Waterland. Because we've got more canals than Italy, and they're all man-made. Yeah.
Super interesting. Well, that's pretty cool. So tell me about your life as now or as a mom. How has your faith journey gone? Like, how does God keep himself close to you? How does he reveal himself to you? How do you stay close to God? I know some of that is us, you know, intentionally turning toward him, and some of that is him pulling us toward him. So how has that relationship gone as you've gone through your busy life?
You know, it's really funny that you say that, because last month or so, it's just like, God, where are you? It's like, I really need, because I am used to him really answering questions. And one of the biggest things is like when my husband and I, we have our morning ritual. We have our coffee. We sit in our chairs. We do our Bible study and our quiet time. Okay. And usually if we're praying about something, God will tell him, he'll tell me. And then all of a sudden something will happen. A conversation will start and we'll say, oh, well, this is what God told me. Well, this is what God told me. And it's the exact same thing.
Wow.
So it's funny that you asked that, because recently it's just like, okay, God, you haven't done that in a while. And I really need that again, because that is when I really felt the closest, because I'm like, all right, I'm on the right track. I know what we're doing. I know where we're going, because he was just right there. And now church planning is its own beast.
I believe it.
People say it's like giving birth to a baby, you know, and you're having to feed it and you're having to nurture it. And you're, you know, so in a way we're parenting again. just parenting adults that come to church. But it's really fun, because if I'm really having a bad day, we have these white birds. They're called egrets.
Okay.
And they come into your yard and they start poking holes. It's like your aerator into your yard. And it's really been fun, because if I'm just really having a bad day, all of a sudden a flock will show up in my yard. And it's like, all right, God, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. I know you haven't left me. I'm just needing to walk. And I think that's part of the hardest thing for me right now, is I know he's there and he's asking me to walk in obedience. But yet he's not giving me all those everyday signs.
Right.
And I think it's one of those, he's wanting to see if I'm going to be obedient or if I'm going to stop just short, because he hasn't told me to stop yet. He's asked me to be obedient, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm at right now. So it's a whole different way of trusting God, one that I've never had to really delve into. So I think it's making me even stronger for that quiet time, as, okay, Lord, I don't hear you just pounding down on me. I know you're here, because you kind of give me that bird that kind of flies in and stuff.
Yeah.
But you're not answering what I need you to answer right now in a way that you used to answer. And maybe that's a growth process, or maybe it's something he's trying to teach me.
Yeah. Well, both. It can be a hard place to be, or it is a hard place to be. And sometimes people are there for years, and yet God grows us through those times of quiet.
It is. And I was teaching last week to the kids in children's church, and I said, You know that the Israelites were disobedient because they kept trying to say, well, where's God? And he was like, well, because they weren't answering the way he wanted them to, they would just go here and they would go here. And I said, you know, and Moses didn't get to go because as the leader, he still wasn't obedient to saying, okay, come on, guys, let's go. Mm-hmm. And so it was more of he let the other people kind of dissuade and persuade and different versus, okay, let's go. I'm serious. I hear, you know. And so Moses died before he went in. And it's like, I don't want to be that. I want to see that.
Yeah.
I don't want all this distraction stuff that's going on to be the Israelites in my life going, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are we sure we're supposed to go this way? Maybe we're supposed to go that way. And I want to be so sure-footed with God that says, I will get there, and it's on his promises that I will see that and I will enter it.
That reminds me of a quote I heard somebody say once, don't doubt in the dark what God showed you in the light.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can say don't doubt in the dark, but fact is we are going to doubt in the dark. But
yes.
But you're right. We do need to cling to those promises and to what he did show us in those times of more obvious connection. Yeah. Oh, thank you. So we've been talking about the fruit of the Spirit in our group. So can you tell me a little bit about how God has been growing you in the fruit of the Spirit?
Which part? Let's
see. Well, love, joy, peace, patience.
You know, kindness. It's really funny that you even talk about joy, because that has probably been one of the biggest things we've been working on is joy in the dark times. And knowing there's a difference between joy and happiness, because it is so easy to get in a depressive state because you're not happy, because you're not seeing God work every single day. Something new's not happening. He's not bringing like lots and lots of people to the church. He's not bringing lots and lots of funds to, you know, it's a slow go growth, but yet I have to be reminded my joy is not in my circumstances. That's the happiness part, you know? The joy is in the fact that God gave us this vision to come down here, to plant this church, to be here for the people. And if I allow my circumstances to take away the joy, then I've lost.
Wow.
Joy is really...
Yeah. So how do you hold on to that then? Like, how do you not let the circumstances take away your joy?
It's very hard. It is very difficult because in a worldly sense, joy and happiness have become intertwined.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to define one without the other, isn't it?
Right. And so we have to understand that the joy comes from within, knowing that you are in a right relationship with God, that God gave you this vision. He has asked you to do this, and now you need to walk through it through obedience, and you need to cling to the hope, like you said, in the light when he gave that to you, even though you're being clouded with the darkness because it's not going as fast as you want, or it's not going as quickly, or it's just like one, I mean, I'll even say, it's been very hard to have joy the last 2 weeks. Hmm. We are a very small church because we're young. And we have been hit one right after another of death and death and death of very close, you know, like a son and a brother and a best friend. And it's like, seriously? Okay. Yeah. You know, and people are like, well, you know, you must be doing something right because Satan's attacking. And I'm like, well, he can just leave us alone right about now.
Yeah, exactly. We need to hold on to something.
Yes. But it was, but it's just the joy of knowing that you're being obedient and not looking at the circumstances, because the circumstances would tell you to quit.
Yeah.
Now, if God has clearly told you to quit, then you need to have joy in being obedient to quit, to step back and say, okay, what do I need to do now? You know, and that's one of the things that we've even had to do. You know, it's not that we quit the church, but now we're bivocational. We didn't come down here with that intention, was to be bivocational. So it took a lot for me to say, okay, Lord, I'm going to have joy in this and I'm going back to work. And not, you know, and not say, whatever, you know, kind of thing. But having joy, knowing God's in control, I may not be happy about being bivocational, but I'm going to be joyful in the fact that I get to minister now to people that I may not have been ministered to because they wouldn't walk in the door of a church.
So where are you finding the people for your church?
Actually, word of mouth is a lot of it. We did some flyers. Wouldn't recommend it for any church planner ever. I think it was the biggest waste of $10,000.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was, but it was one of those things that's in those, you know, plant, you know, church planners, 1, 2, 3 kind of books, right?
Send out the flyers. That's right. Step two. First, you got to get a logo. Then you got to send out your flyers.
So just being in the community, which is probably harder for us being empty nesters. We don't have a dog. We don't have kids, you know, so we're not involved in the school system and that kind of stuff. So we have basically hung out at coffee shops, people that we have met through relationships. We did not intentionally go to other churches and ask for people.
Oh, that's good.
Because that is not why we're here. We are here to reach those who have been hurt by the church, who have left the church, who want something different. Because we are not this big, you know, elaborate show. We started with a guy and a guitar.
Yeah.
We don't have the light show going. You know, it's just us. And what you see is what you get. And we want you all to be a part of a family.
That's great. And so, and there are so many people that need that. So that's
great. Yeah. But unfortunately, they think church is this big show and, you know, and then they got to find you and then they got to trust you.
Yes. Wow. Wow. That sounds like it's going to take a lot of faithfulness. Another one of those fruits of the spirit.
Yes.
Just lots of persistence and long suffering.
Perseverance.
Yes. Lots of perseverance. So you've been doing this now for 20 weeks. So what, that's
20, we're about 22 weeks. We started in September.
Okay.
Yeah. Started in September. We've been here since September a year ago. So we've been here almost 18 months. Just getting the footwork ready, getting in the community and that kind of stuff.
Okay. So has it been hard not living near your kids?
It has been. It has been a lot harder. We've had, well, talk about faithfulness and God. So we get here, we got here in September, and right after we got here, our daughter called and said, I'm pregnant. This was our middle daughter, and we're so excited because they've been trying for years. And I mean, they had two other kids, but they wanted that third. And so they've been trying and trying. So we get the phone call. She's pregnant. Yay. We're so excited. About the next week or 2 weeks later, we get another phone call that says, oh my gosh, our world's just been turned upside down. My husband has cancer.
Oh.
Yeah, he was 36.
Wow.
And thought he had pneumonia, went into the doctor's office, and he kept saying, I need you to do a chest x-ray. I need you to do a chest x-ray. I don't feel well. And they finally said, okay. And basically, there was a tumor behind his heart and his lungs. And it was the size of a cell phone by the time they got to it. Oh, and it wasn't there 2 months prior when he did have pneumonia. And so all of this time while they're pregnant, you know, going so excited about being pregnant, now they're going, okay, now we have to lose our jobs, go, you know, have chemo, can't work, lose their insurance. I mean, and mom and dad are now 800 miles away.
Yeah. Wow.
So talk about God and faithfulness and just knowing you are where you're. And again, that dark time, right? Mm-hmm. If God had clearly not given us a prescription, a back of a truck, and then a couple of other things, we would have packed it up and said, we're done. We're out of here.
Yeah,
we're going
home.
Got
to go home.
Yeah, we've got to go home. Mm. But we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that God was going to be faithful with whatever the circumstances and however the outcome was.
Yeah.
And then baby came out. And what husband got clear of cancer. Yay. Praise God. And then baby came in November. Great pregnancy. Everything was great. And then baby was born and 12 hours later had pneumonia.
No.
And was in the NICU for 12 days.
Oh, wow.
So needless to say, I have found an airline that can get me there lickety split.
No kidding. And prayers can get there even faster.
Yeah. But it was neat watching them. And because I'll be honest, I think because I was not there and I wasn't able to, because I'm a control freak.
Okay.
And take over, God really indwelled in them. And because of Aaron, which is my son-in-law's name, because of his attitude, he was such a light to the nurses and to the other patients and stuff that they, when he lost his insurance and everything, the nurses and everybody went to bat for him and got them to waive fees and waive doctor's visits and different things. So they walked out of this not having to worry how we were going to pay for 6 months of chemo.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It all got worked out.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so watching God be faithful for them.
Well, that's exciting.
You know, but, and not being a part of it, but yet being part of it because I was praying and that kind of stuff. But watching God's faithfulness through the whole thing just reminds me how awesome He is. And He can do so much more than I can do being a control freak.
Yeah. Yes. Well, maybe that was good learning for you and for them as well then.
Oh,
for God just to really show His faithfulness because you were gone.
It was. And now they're very active. There's a new church that just came to town. And so they're going to get involved in that one. And it's a Bible believing church. So we're really excited that they have found a church that they can all agree on and go.
That is tricky. Well, that's exciting.
It is.
So it might take you a few years back, but when your kids were younger, what were some of your favorite ways to share your faith with them?
Well, let's just say you have to preface this with my kids. Let's see. I was 30. So my kids were already, 10, 20, I don't even know how old they were, but I was 30 when I accepted the Lord.
Okay.
I had my first child when I was 19. So you can do the math.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we went to church. So don't get me wrong. We went to church. We played the church. We did that whole thing.
Yeah.
But that's all it was. It was just something we did on Sunday because it was the American thing to do.
Okay.
You know, as we always say.
Cultural,
we just say that.
Yeah.
Yep. It was a cultural thing to do. Yeah, go to church on Sunday. It wasn't until God got a hold of my heart at 30 that said, yeah, this is not right.
Hmm.
And then it wasn't until 2002 when God really said, yeah, you're still playing. Yeah, you're doing more, but you're still playing because I want all of you. I want your all in all. And so what's been fun, so yes, we went to church. Yes, we made sure they were church, that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, they learned very early on that it was just about Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing more about it since they've been older.
Okay. Yeah. That's, you know what? God is so redemptive. He does amazing things.
So it's more along the lines of, hey guys, you know what? This is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that God is asking us to do. And we do need to get active in a church, but it's also about how you're going to treat your kids. How are you going to love your husband? How are you going to have your house be in that peace in your house?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing a whole lot more about it on the backside. And like I tell people all the time when I teach, if there's anything I could do, I would go back and change my children's childhood.
Mm.
And I would change it about me because it was me that they needed, that they were looking to. It was me that this, and I was not a good mom I wasn't abusive or mean like that. But I was not a good mom as in I was frustrated a lot. I didn't know how to have that peace.
Hmm.
And so I let things get to me. And it was about how, you know, the bigger, the better, and having the being able to have that right appearance when you walked out the door versus, okay, we're messed up, y'all, you know, kind of thing. And letting people in and seeing the real mess because that's when you can really bond in relationship with people when they don't think that you're prim and proper and nothing's out of place.
Yeah.
And so teaching my kids now that it's not about, you know, going to buy the bigger things and that stuff, but it's about what are you teaching them and how are you teaching them? You're teaching them how you treat your husband. You're teaching them how you're treating your friends and how you allow your friends to treat you. And how is your house the house that everybody wants to come to because there is a peace? Mm-hmm. Because not because you're the fun mom and letting them do things, but because you care and you really want the best for them. And so I tell people all the time, I wish I could go back and change my kids' childhood, because I would change me to not play the game, but to be a present mom while they were young versus so fearful of what was going to happen next.
Well, that's really good encouragement and a good reminder for us that we are in a really influential place right now as younger moms. So thank you. Thanks for being honest about that too. And I love that, you know, that makes your previous story even more powerful because you were talking about how your kids were seeing God's faithfulness. And so, you know, maybe they'll be 30 when God gets a hold of them too, but it's never too late. And praise God for that, right?
Yes.
So you guys are sharing your faith, even just in what you're doing in your life. You're sharing your faith with your kids and sharing how you've changed, I bet. I mean, if they were old enough.
Oh, yeah.
They're probably quite old enough to see the new mom almost.
Oh, yeah. And they will tell you their best time in life was 2002 when Dad took a whole year off just to get before the Lord. That was when we started our ministry.
Wow.
And I worked all the time. They will tell you that was the best year because they really, really enjoyed their dad being home. That's and cool. I think that's part of the culture. We forget that dads are very influential, especially in girls. Hmm. And we had three girls.
That's right.
And they're very influential. And the way he treats me and the way I treat him is the way their marriage will be, you know, I think so many people just get so caught up that the dad goes and gets and makes all the money and the dad is the one who's always tired or the dad's always doing the, you know, no dads, you know, we really need to remember and encourage the dads, especially with the girls, because if not, they will look in all the wrong places for that daddy sized hole that will be, you know, open and wanting to be filled. And that is huge, especially in today's society.
Yeah. So that, I hear you say the word encourage and not nag. Don't nag your husband to be present with your kids. You encourage him. Do you have any specific things that maybe have helped in your marriage for encouraging your husband to connect with his daughters?
You know, daddy-daughter dates. Daddy-daughter dates. And I'm not just talking the ones that the churches put on, you know, where it's the Valentines or the, you know, different things. But once, and it even goes for moms and boys, you know, but taking the time to let your kids one-on-one just go out with you. And dads then, you know, open the car door and, you know, and pull in the seat and let them pick what they want. And, you know, and just trying to teach them what to expect on a date. Because I think so many kids can't wait. Like for my house, it was, I can't wait until I'm 16. I can date, you know, but I didn't have a great, role model of what dating looked like. I didn't have a good role. My mom and dad got divorced when I was young, you know? So I didn't have that. I had that whole nag kind of, you know, he said, she said, and everybody's against everybody kind of relationship because they were not good. So that would be something else. If you are in a relationship that you do happen to find that you are a broken family because you're of divorce or whatever, and it's very hard to do, but maintain that relationship for the kids' sake, that they can see a friendship. Okay, we weren't good marriage, but have that friendship and not talking bad against each other. you know, one of the other things that we've really tried to start, you know, here at the house is I never correct my husband in front of the kids.
Hmm.
You know, if there's something that he has said or done something, I will wait until we're alone and then correct him and say, you know, that probably wasn't, or that's not, or I had, or whatever.
Yeah.
Because if they see especially a strong role model in the female, you know, taking, it could even look as an attack or something onto the male, you know, and we've got commercials right now running that show the dad as just a bum, or, you know, can't do anything right.
Oh, like Homer Simpson.
You know, and it's just like, really? Mm. Is that what we want now? Because we're trying to be powerful. No, it's we're together, a cohesive unit.
Yeah.
Even if you have a divorce situation, mm-hmm. you have to be cohesive for the kids' sake, because the kids need to see, okay, they didn't work out marriage-wise, but they were still friends and they didn't badmouth each other and they didn't use us mm-hmm. as pawns and that kind of stuff.
That's great. So, well, thanks, Meredith. Our time here is kind of wrapping up. I really have appreciated your wisdom and your story. Thank you so much for sharing some of that with us. It was really cool.
No problem.
Is there anywhere, like, are you writing online somewhere, or if we wanted to connect with you further, where would we find you?
Meredith Sage Kendall is my author name.
Okay.
And I have a website.
All right.
I also do podcasts.
Okay.
But you can get everything on there, and then I'm on Facebook and Instagram.
Awesome. So just is your website meredithsagekendall.com?
It is.
Perfect. All right, I'll put that up. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.